Greetings, growers from around the globe. Jordan River here with more GrowCast, helping you cultivate trees of varying sizes. We continue with Worldwide December. We are headed to the East Coast to speak with Justin. He is a hemp farmer at Canterbury's Hemp out in Virginia. And we are talking to him about the local climate, about farming hemp, about Delta 8, and about so much more. This is a very good episode. We've been getting a lot of hemp requests, and this is going to really satisfy all those people who have been waiting for that type of episode. Before we get into it with Justin, shout out to AC Infinity, of course, acinfinity.com, code GROWCAST15 for 15% off site-wide. AC Infinity dropped their lights recently. You know them from their Cloudline series. Their inline fans are just the best. The S series is great. The T series is wonderful. Grab a new tent. Their tents are extra thick. The poles are double thick. They are absolutely a game changer, if I say so myself. And now they're coming out with a new attachable mount fan that goes right on your pole. It looks like the best oscillator you can get. I don't think that's dropped yet, but they're trying to satisfy all your needs. Fabric pots, trimming scissors, everything you need. acinfinity.com. It's a really great manufacturer. Fantastic stuff there. And you save 15% with code GROWCAST15. All right, everybody, let's get into it with Justin. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in again today. Before we get started, I must urge you to hit subscribe, follow the show, of course. Spread the show. Tell a grower about GrowCast. It really, really helps us out. It's one of the best things you can do. And of course, if you are a positive-minded grower interested in helping others, or if you need help in your garden, join the order. GrowCastPodcast.com/join the order. Today, oh, this is good. This is we're still in Worldwide December, I'm now realizing, waking up in the middle of this interview. We're still in the middle of a Worldwide December. We're back in the United States currently, and we're headed to the East Coast to Virginia. We're going to speak to a hemp grower who lives out there in Virginia, and he's a listener of the show, I believe, and he's really killing it in the hemp game. Very excited to speak with Justin from Canterbury's Hemp. What's up, Justin?
Hey, man. How's it going? Glad to be on.
Yeah, glad to have you, man. We were talking off air. Justin's a nice guy. He's easy to talk to. He's killing it, like I said, with Canterbury's Hemp out in Virginia. Talk to us, Justin, about your story. When Virginia went legal, hemp legal or whatever, you know, when it became a thing, how you started Canterbury's, and also your personal journey with your cannabis experience.
Yeah, so Canterbury's currently has been around for 3 seasons now since the hemp bill or farm bill was passed. I've came into the company not too long ago. I was out in Oregon doing some things out there in medical field or medical cannabis grow.
Oh, that's right.
And the owner out here, Jeff Bogard, is the founder owner of Canterbury's. And he used to be a farmer for livestock and things like that. What got him into this was really... he wanted to change up what he was doing and ended up basically one of his daughters was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. She was only 22 years old and ended up basically started to use CBD. And that was in the first year of growing and really saw the effects and actually got her to become cancer free from that. So yeah, Jeff's the owner. I'm here as a director of cultivation now. And yeah, I love it out here. We're really doing big things, you know, trying to create a quality handmade product versus, you know, these mass industrial 40, 50 acre fields or bigger doing everything with machines. So we really key in on doing everything by hand and trying to get that most quality premium product out of our fields. So we grow everything like cannabis from the hand. We, you know, plant by hand, harvest by hand and do everything we can to just, you know, preserve the quality of the product.
Damn.
So yeah, I got into this, at a young teenage age, I got into it from being diagnosed with arthritis. I was 8 years old when I got diagnosed and I was on kinds of, I was on all kinds of prescription medicines and things like that that helped, but necessarily wasn't healthy to me. So I started dabbling into cannabis and got into that and realized it was helping me a bunch. And then I was cleared into remission after using cannabis for a few years. So that's what got me into cannabis. And then from there, I really wanted to create my own medicine and grow it myself. And that's what really got me dabbling into growing. And honestly, that was more fun than anything I've done. So there was the drive to be, you know, hey, how can I make this a career instead of just a hobby?
Right, right, man. Yeah, I think we, a lot of us get that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you went from cannabis, well, I mean, you know how it goes. You went from THC, high potency cannabis, to hemp. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, before when I was using just cannabis, I didn't think much about CBD. It was still up and coming. Not much was known, but I actually stopped using cannabis for a little while and kind of cleared my tolerance field and was able to get a, you know, an isolated opinion on just CBD. So I quit smoking cannabis, started using CBD products a year or two after being clean for a little bit and not smoking every day. And it really amazed me on what it did. And with my arthritis, not smoking for those 2 years, my arthritis got really bad. It started to come back on. Really bad swelling, joint pain, this, that, and the other. And I found the CBD not only stopped that inflammation and stopped the pain every day, but I wasn't, you know, getting extremely stoned. I didn't have to get extremely stoned from it to get the benefit. So there's where I found, okay, here, I got something going. It has an effect. It works great. Yeah, it's not your party smoke necessarily, but it's really got some benefits you would love to have in there. So I say for anybody that uses THC to add some CBD into your regimen, it's a no-brainer. It's going to help you out a ton, especially if you're, you know, dealing with pain, anxiety, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I like it in the morning. That's the ideal day for me, is some of that like one-to-one, or like you said, straight CBD early, maybe with your coffee. And then hit the THC later on. It's a good experience.
Exactly. Yeah. One-to-ones are great.
From a cultivation perspective as well, you started cultivating probably, you know, THC plants. And then you got it. That's really interesting because, you know, we primarily have home growers growing THC dominant strains listening to this show. But like all of us are interested in the hemp industry. And a lot of people are thinking about doing what you're doing, which is getting into the hemp industry from this side, you know, getting out of the black market into the white market, but through hemp. So I just think that's a fascinating story. And I think people would probably appreciate advice from you. I know this is kind of putting you on the spot, but like, just talk to me about that transition and maybe any advice you would give to people thinking about making that same transition.
So with that, honestly, I got into it just on, you know, timing's kind of everything on that.
It's true.
I came back to the East Coast, was still just itching to grow cannabis, and I wanted to find a way to do it as my lifestyle, as, you know, my honest work. So it just, timing worked out to find this farm at the right time and really get things going in the right direction for cannabis. And making that switch, it is difficult. There's definitely some things you want to consider. Obviously, being in the hemp market, it's very flooded. It's basically like selling ice cream with regulations. Anyone can do it. So having a plan on doing it is the smartest thing. I would tell anybody that wants to switch into hemp, before you grow it, before you pop a seed, you have to have someone that's going to buy it. You got to have that done before you start growing it, because it's not like cannabis. You can grow it and definitely find someone that wants it. But with hemp, the market can get flooded very quickly, and you have to have either a niche or a very premium product, something that's not, you know, the run of the mill in this industry.
I have heard that story time and time again.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with flower, you know, THC flower, to be honest. But people are jumping in the hemp industry and then realizing at the end of the day, you need to either have smokable hemp flower or you need to process it. I've heard the term biomass, you know, process it as biomass into different extracts, I assume, or textiles. Like, there's only a handful of things you can really do with the stuff, right? You got to choose and have an outlet for it, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely have a dedicated path is important with that. I mean, there's so many things that we're learning that we can put this into. Like, one of the things on the cannabis farm we're doing right now in our lab that we're currently building out is, doing nanoemulsification. Yeah, doing nanoemulsification is a new one where we're actually being able to make water-soluble products. So we're just trying to diversify what we can put it into. But yeah, a lot of farms you're seeing are just creating the biomass, and the biomass market is flooded. So having a premium hemp flower or being able to in-house turn this into a product is the difference with us at Cannabreeze. We're, you know, basically trying to mimic the vertical integration that you see with the medical field out here, where they have to do everything from seed to sale with it, grow it, harvest it, make it into a product, and then sell that product all within the same building. So that's kind of what we have here at Canterbury's, is trying to make a good decision at the start so we don't get behind at the end. Because like I said, this every day there's a new hemp farmer coming out, and you want to try to differentiate yourself and make sure you can capitalize on that.
Damn, man. That was a good ass answer. That wasn't on our list.
But yeah, it really is. I mean, there really is so many things you can do with it. Like you said, the biomass is huge, but having alternate ways to put it into things is really important. And making, I think, a brand for yourself versus making just a bunch of biomass and trying to find a broker or, you know, a buyer for it. That's where I've seen a lot of people fail. And, you know, I've even seen things. We have Virginia Hemp Association meetings where all these farmers come out, and I've seen just people thinking in the wrong way, as in, hey, all right, I got 20 acres full of it, but I don't have a place to dry it. I don't have a team to harvest it. And I don't have a buyer. So those are the things you really, you should be putting in place before you get to that step. Sometimes think backwards before you start.
Great advice. You mentioned something there, nano emulsification to make cannabinoids soluble. Now that's all I hear is it's not water soluble, need that fat. What is that nano emulsification process?
So basically at that point, you can put it into a drink. You can put it in anything that's in a water where you're not having oil and water separate in a can. It can stay in that nano molecule or tiny size particle and be able to be homogenized within that drink or whatever you want to put it in.
Jeez.
So we're really excited about that. We're working with, we just got a Sono Mechanics machine here, and we're actually just putting it together now to start doing it in-house.
That's crazy, man. I thought it had something to do with making it digestible, but I mean, clearly there's new technology.
Definitely, and it actually hits your system quicker. So instead of like a normal edible or anything else you would normally take, a tincture, edible, topical, it's going to take a while to get into your system. With a nano emulsified product, you're talking 10, 15 minutes tops.
Is that right?
And you're feeling the full onset of that
product. Damn. Okay.
Yeah. So even with THC, you're going to be seeing that a lot. You know, there's tons of THC drinks that are nano emulsified or water soluble. The difference is that there's different water soluble products. Nano emulsification is the best way to do it
because it
is that small particle that's getting into your system that fast.
Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense with all those THC drinks. Like you said, clearly they have to have that technology down. Damn. That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
Eye-opening episode here, Justin. This is dope. The listeners are liking it. I'm sensing in my head. We'll be right back with Justin. But before that, plant success, baby. Gotta add those microbes. Plant success is just the best. They make the great white. That's their mycogranular. Toss that in multiple species, high concentration. Get that done or use the Orca. The liquid mycorrhiza. Can you believe that we just spoke to Rhizo Rich and he says he only uses liquid mycorrhiza? That's nuts. Use that liquid mycorrhiza to keep that myco application going and going and going. The myco chum is what I want to talk about for a minute today. This is their, it's food for microbes. That's why it's called myco chum. It's got a high quality molasses base. There's other goodies in there. And no matter what products you're using to enhance your microbiology in your living soil or whatever medium you happen to be growing in, MycoChum is a great additive because it's going to feed those microbes. It's going to feed the beneficial bacteria. It's going to feed the fungi. It's going to feed everything in there with that delicious, delicious MycoChum from Plant Success. They are great supporters of the show. We love Plant Success. Use their king crab. Use all of the products I mentioned and use their MycoChum to boost your biology. Plant Success, baby. Find them in your local hydro store. All right, let's get back to it with Justin from Canterbury's. As cannabis growers, doesn't matter what we're growing, we're always interested in strains. I know there's some really, I don't know, seems to be hot CBD strains like Cherry Wine and stuff like that. Are you currently working with and have you worked with in the past that are considered hemp strains?
So for this year, we predominantly went with a company out of Boulder, Colorado, Front Range Biosciences. They're currently actually switching to mostly cannabis now, but they had some good genetics we were going to try out. And some of those names of their genetics this year we did were like Trifecta, Angie, Valerie, Southern Spice, and Panacea was the CBG we used from them. they always sound a lot different than your THC strains, unfortunately, but they did all right for our field. You know, that's the biggest thing I think with the CBD industry is it's not as developed as our THC strains, where you have these really hardy genetics that can do well and you know where they can do well. As with CBD, you really, for me as a farmer switching to that, you're really trying to find what works well in your region and what will grow
right
dominantly out there. I mean, there's a lot out in this Virginia climate we have to deal with, but yeah, I feel like the Front Range Bioscience genetics did decent this year overall. I also did run 2 strains from Oregon CBD as well that I was really stoked about. I had tried their flower before from other growers and really liked the genetics there. And I tried the Suver Haze and the Special Sauce this year, and it did great in our climate. I mean, really held up to the bad conditions in the late season.
Damn, nice. So Oregon CBD and then Front Range, you said? Front Range Biosciences?
Yeah, Front Range Biosciences.
So I really like when you hemp growers shout out those companies, because I understand that it's very important to get those genetics that are trustworthy, because you don't want your shit testing hot. So it's interesting exactly to hear straight from the mouth of farmers. Speaking of that, and speaking of the weather, like you were just saying, it is worldwide December. What's it like growing in Virginia with the climate? I know I'm jumping around a little bit with the questions, but are you dealing with, I mean, geez, I see some of the storms out on the East Coast. They seem to be pretty wild, but you tell me what it's like growing in the Virginia climate.
Yeah. So, you know, during beginning of the season through propagation and vegetation stages, it's amazing out here. I mean, we got great weather. You have all the sun you could ever need, perfect climate conditions throughout veg. But when we jump into flower out here, you really start to see the weather working against you, especially when you have nice structured plants with really fat, dense colas. It seems to always affect those the worst. Your best buds are always most susceptible. You know, mid-July, late July, going into August, we have a lot of, you know, high humidity, late evening rains going into night. And that's just the worst. It's the perfect storm for a bad day on a hemp farm or any cannabis farm. So that's the one thing we really struggle with out here, is trying to find mold resistant genetics or anything that can stay away from a powdery mildew or a bud rot. That's the biggest thing we see out here. And actually a lot of farms, that's their Achilles heel that takes them down for a season, just because there's almost no way around it.
Damn, dude.
It is a good area for it, but it's just the flowering like cycle. You have to, you know, you got to be prepared to have that and try to have a course of action to fix it.
Yeah, I know it can get quite humid in those late months, which, like you said, is exactly what you don't want. Do you have any crazy pests out there? Jumping worms I saw on the East Coast, or do you get the same, you know, bud worms everyone else does?
Yeah, so the biggest pest in our fields we get is out here in Virginia, we have a lot of cornfields. So you get cornworms that actually jump from the cornfields into your fields, lay eggs, and then you have a bunch of, you know, basically caterpillars that you have to take care of.
Cornworms, no.
Yes, they'll dive right deep into your bud, make a nice hole in it, and it basically kills it off. They suck out all of the living juice, everything that's on that plant, they eat it, and that creates a dead spot. And then if you get this high humidity and rain, it creates a spot for mold to start. So there are worse pests we have here on the farm, but throughout the season, we actually deploy, like all the way through the grow cycle, we deploy out a ton of ladybugs and a ton of praying mantis out in the field. So we don't actually spray out in our fields. We use, you know, natural predators, and I'll be deploying like 40,000 ladybugs at a time out there. And that's working great for any other thing that you'd worry about, whether that's spider mites, aphids, anything like that, thrips, that type of thing. It really takes care of it. And a lot of people get a laugh out of it. They're like, wait, you guys ship out ladybugs and praying mantis? It's like, yeah, that's how it works.
Man, I know. I mean, I know the predator insects are good at keeping away populations and things like that. But do you find them to be, I mean, 40,000's got to be like an army. Do you find them to be quite effective when you have an infestation?
Yeah, honestly, we've never had a really bad infestation out in the field. I mean, the only thing you can't always keep up with are those cornworms. But overall, I've never found an outbreak at aphids in the field. Having natural predators out there just eliminates that, versus an indoor grow when you have no natural predators. That's where you really see a lot of difference with pest control on that scale of an indoor grow.
Man, That's fucking crazy. Got to watch out for those cornworms, man.
Yeah, come out east, you'll find some cornworms in midflower.
Yikes. The coast is probably, what is it, pretty salty, high salinity out there?
Yeah, we're really in a nice area. We're probably just less than an hour outside of D.C., west of D.C., and we have a great climate. As you get closer to the coast, it does differ a little bit. I know some really good climate areas is just south of us in North and South Carolina. We have some growers down there that really enjoy that climate and do well. Still have to deal with the late humidity and rain, but not as bad as our area. I mean, we're just right in the middle of it here in Virginia.
Man, nuts. Talk to me about the scene out there. Like, I know cannabis has been big in Virginia far before legalization. Like, you guys had a really thriving black market kind of culture and scene, but what is it like now post-hemp legalization? And I think currently passing more laws, you tell me.
Yeah. So it's always been around. It's prolific. It's good to see it coming to light. More people are, you know, stepping out of the shadow and being able to feel a little less criminal about these beautiful plants that we can create. So I think that's amazing. I was even at a local nursery this year, early spring, and I was just looking at them because we knew July 1st was coming around when legalization for recreational was being, you know, implemented. And for us in Virginia, that meant there's no dispensaries yet, but you can grow your own up to four plants. So I was talking to this guy at the nursery and he was just smiling and said, yep, everyone's coming in here growing big Columbia tomatoes this year and buying all kinds of stuff. And I was like, this is great. It's good to hear. Great to see people really, you know, yeah, coming to light and being excited about it. So, you know, the market's always been here and it's cool to see it be more legal. You're going to see better flower and hopefully some more Virginia created flower. I mean, I do my own personal four. This year I did a nice greenhouse and had amazing results despite the weather. And, you know, it's one of those things where we hope to see it get to a recreational point. And even for us at Canterbury's, we hope they let, you know, the small craft growers in. And it's not just another big commodity of big billion-dollar companies coming in. So we'll see. We're kind of keeping our fingers crossed on that. But it is really great. I think everyone's excited to finally see this come to light out here. I didn't personally think it would happen for quite some time. So yeah, pretty stoked on it.
I mean, it was, I guess, a little bit surprising as an outsider. You might not have guessed Virginia would be the next one to go, but we're certainly happy for you.
No, absolutely. I mean, I was looking over in Maryland for cannabis jobs before I was here at Canterbury's, and because I literally thought, I was like, there's no way we're passing this in the next 5 years. So, yeah, very thankful to see our state doing something right.
That's cool, man. And you do see a handful of, you know, breeders. Shout out to Duke Diamond. Mm-hmm. The free man, Duke Diamond. Yeah, he's from Virginia. And like you got some really powerful cannabis luminaries coming out of there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool that you were able to stay and work in the industry. How dare I not mention CannabreezeHemp.com, of course, the website. You can find all of Justin's products, all of that good stuff, at CannabreezeHemp.com. Pre-rolls, cartridges, all sorts of hemp flower, man, growing for that sweet, sweet hemp flower. It looks amazing. I know you grow organically. You're a FUPU user, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's cool here. We try to work with people that are close to our area or locally sourced products. And FUPU has been one of the biggest ones. I can't tell you, man, how many times I've tried different countless regimens and different companies. But yeah, the FUPU stuff just really works, man. I use the whole line here on the farm. I use it on my plants at home.
Jeez,
and
man,
it just beats the hell out of mixing a million bottles and doing all this extra work that, you know, it might create a little more here or there, but really overall, I'm getting amazing results with it. I use their whole veg and bloom line, and they actually just released a foliar spray that I'm digging.
Yep, the mist. We've been using the mist too.
Yeah, so I've used that on the field. I did a field application of that foliar this year and had amazing results. I mean, just, I had one test row that I didn't do and the rest of the field we hit. I mean, bigger stalks, faster growth. It was ridiculous. So yeah, the FUPU line is really nice, especially whether you're using on hemp or cannabis. I've done my personal grow this year with all FUPU. And I mean, some of the most crystally outdoor nugs I've ever had. Great terpene profiles, man, came out of it. And I think that's like the secret sauce there, is like using the FUPU sugar. It really is.
Oh yeah, the sweetener. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, the sweetener. That eight sugar, man.
Yeah,
it's,
for sure.
It's good stuff. So I really like them. Like I said, they're right down the street from us, over in Maryland. And the whole team at Foop is just amazing. If I need, you know, hey, I'm growing X amount of plants this year, I don't have to sit back and do my calculations on how much I need. They write it up for me. It's one less thing I have to worry about. So the customer service side's nice. It's not only nutrients, they also give me like my pumps I need to dispense it. So I've had companies in the past, here's your jugs of nutrients. Have a good day. These guys are really going the extra step. So I mean, that goes a long way for me as a commercial farmer and just an at-home farmer, man. It kicks
cool,
ass.
Man.
So.
We love to hear that. They're partners of ours. I think currently code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. We like the Foop a lot here. That's really dope that you're using it on a large scale in hemp cultivation. That's nuts. I know it's really conducive to that soil style, and I know you're a soil grower yourself. Is it your only nutrient delivery system, or are you using it on top of like a nice rich organic soil?
So yeah, our soil out here is really, really decent overall. We have some clay in our soil, obviously, but it is a rich soil, but the nutrients work well with, you know, just wanting to be organic farm. That was our biggest thing, is growing organic.
You're using native soil?
Native soil, yeah.
You're using native soil, and then you're adding Foop. That's fucking crazy.
And it's killing it, man. I mean, we're running it through double drip line on each row. Haven't had any clogs. We've been using them for, I think, this is our full second year, using them out in the field on 10,000 plants. So, I mean, we're getting amazing results.
God damn.
I hit it at full strength. Even on my personal grows, I kind of test it out and push it well past what the recommended dose is. And I don't see any problems. Like, I never have burnt my stuff, but I love just kind of mad scientists messing around with it.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything but great results with it. But that foliar, funny story with that is we had an indoor grow going while we had the outdoor field going. And my guys were doing a IPM spray inside and mixed it up a little too concentrated and actually burnt up most of the room. And I did a foliar spray on that for 2 weeks every other day. And I had the room just lush again. Like it was insane.
Yeah, that mist is
so
the
if
shit.
You even have the struggling plants, it's really, you know, a beautiful foliar. I mean, I've used other mixes and tried other things, but it's just really simple. And I keep crediting them. I'm like, hey, I don't even have to pH this. It just comes in perfect. So
know, right?
Some people don't care about a pH on a foliar, but you know, it was just an extra added nod to it.
Well, I do like the mist quite a bit, man. Listeners have heard me talk about it ad nauseum. And I use the Foop in my own garden and get really great results of it on top of my living soil. But I just never suspected a outdoor hemp grower, large scale, killing it with the Foop. Like, that's awesome. That's a really dope coincidence.
Yeah, man. No, it's a killer product, and we won't be switching from that anytime. I mean, even I hope we can do cannabis soon with it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Talk to me about, speaking of cannabis, you know, the THC stuff, talk to me about your personal grow and some of the strains you like growing, maybe the differences. I don't know. Tell me about your hobby grow.
So this year I went with some tried and true genetics that I liked. I used actually some Barney's Farms, Blue Gelato 41.
Nice.
Mimosa Evo. Glookies and a wedding cake, all from Barney's this year. Just simple genetics, stuff I like. And I'll tell you what, they turned out amazing. The nose on the mimosa was just nuts. Amazing smells, like literally smelled like champagne and oranges. So it was really hyped on that. And same with that, I used 100-gallon pots for that in a greenhouse.
Whoa.
And these things were touching the roof at like 10 feet.
What the fuck?
And they didn't even get out there. I went legal. I didn't put them out until July 1st. Didn't get them out there till July 1st in the ground. And man, if they would have had the extra month and a half, I don't know what I would have done. But yeah, it worked great. I just used the Foop line, and I added, you know, a couple of compost teas here and there just for fun, because I like doing that every once
nice,
in a while.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's fucking crazy though. You got four plants, so you decide to go with the 100-gallon pot method?
Yeah, if they're going to put a limit on how many you can do, then you just got to grow them bigger. So
it's funny because I joke about that a lot, but you really took it to the final degree.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I learned out from my buddy out in Oregon when I was out there. Was when you have a certain number amount of plants you do, you have to go bigger. So even out there, it was cool to see we do 500-gallon pots and grow. I mean, literally monsters that are 22 feet tall, 15 feet wide, averaging like 10 pounds or more per plant. And that just seemed like the way to do it when you have a, you know, number constraint.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, with an indoor tent grow, maybe you got to, you know, you get a large tent, you grow them as big as you can in as large pots as you can, but 100 gallons each in an outdoor greenhouse, that is ideal, my friend. That's the way to game the system.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very enjoyable. Big trees, less numbers of plants, but just bigger trees.
Yeah, I love it. Nice strain selection too. You know, the classics like Wedding Cake, you know, these new poly hybrid strains, just so fire, so tasty.
Yeah, a lot of nose off them, and that's what I like to look for. A little bit of exotic color, but not anything crazy. But yeah, I love those strains this year. And I tell you what, the Blue Gelato, I mean, that thing was heavy 4 weeks into flower. It was already getting heavy. And I was like, where's this thing going to end up?
You got to be careful of those cornworms.
Yes.
You're going to wind up with the bud rot in your large nugs because of the cornworms.
Yeah, saddest days ever.
I know you also work in Delta 8. Can you talk to me about, as someone who's never tried it, can you talk to me about growing Delta 8 and the Delta 8 products you offer?
All right. Yeah. So, you know, you can find that almost everywhere now, it seems, which is good and bad. So growing it, you can't technically grow Delta 8. It has to be converted through either hemp derived or cannabis derived in a lab. So it's conversion of, you know, your CBD or CBG into Delta 8, just, you know, converting those molecules under pressure and temperaments, basically. But the biggest thing I find with that is I love the product. It works. It's not as strong as THC itself. A lot of people will say it's a nice like 3-to-1 ratio. So, you know, three hits of it will equal one hit of regular Delta 9. I think the biggest thing for a consumer, like beware kind of thing, is just really know what company you're using and how it's created. Because there are a lot of synthetics out there that are completely made in the lab and not just converted under those right circumstances. So I think that's the biggest thing I get asked about all the time with this new Delta 8. Hey, federally legal, awesome product, it's psychoactive, but just be careful where you get it. And that's one thing when we got into it here at Canterbury's that I was very adamant about was working with people that knew exactly what they were doing with it. And we actually ended up working with a great place out of Colorado as well to make sure it was done correctly, because at this time we cannot do that in our lab. So that was something where you just want to make sure what you're getting, really make sure it's hemp derived or cannabis derived, and that's not a synthetic. That sometimes can be hard to find, but just knowing what company you're working with, you should be able to ask those questions and figure that out. But totally cool product, great to have, especially for these states that aren't legal and want a product they can pick up at the store. That's a great option.
Yeah, I got to try this Delta 8 because it's all I hear about, especially in the non-legal states, people being able to order it, you know, no problem, bing, bang, boom. And yeah, kind of getting into the difference.
Let me send you one out.
I'll
send you one out. So you can try it. And that's the cool thing. Even with ours, it's not just Delta 8. We actually do 4-in-1. So it's got the CBD, it's got your CBG, and we use actually CBT in there as well to actually, instead of adding terpenes or anything like that, the CBT actually makes it the viscosity of it better. So it's a great cart. I'll send you one out.
That'd be dope, man. I'm sorry, I wasn't fishing for a cart there, but I do appreciate the offer and I'll take it. It's just I've heard a ton about it. It's kind of a crime that I haven't tried it already. And it's just, you know, knowing the difference, like you said, in the sources and knowing the difference with synthetic lab made stuff versus derived from the real thing. It's pretty crazy how fast all this stuff is moving. So, hey, as long as it's not that spice that was making people have seizures and shit, I'm fucking happy. You know what I'm saying? We're stepping in the right direction. Obviously, we would love it if you could cultivate any cannabinoids you wanted, but like at least this is, we're headed kind of as a whole, we're headed in the right direction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Canterbury's Hemp, of course, is where you can find said cartridges and all that fun stuff. And find out more about Justin's farm, CanterburysHemp.com. Also on Instagram, follow him on Instagram. Just search Canterbury's Hemp. Google it, you'll find him. Justin, anything else before we sign off here, man? You were a wonderful first-time guest. We loved hearing from you.
Thank you, man. I'm stoked to be on, man. It's really cool to be talking to you.
Justin, this was great. Seriously, let me thank you on behalf of the audience. Great first appearance, and we'll talk to you down the road for sure, my friend.
Yeah, I hope to hear from you soon.
All right, everybody. That's all for today. Make sure to follow GrowCast as well at GrowCast. Get on the green list for free, our mailing list, growcastpodcast.com/list. And that's all for today. This is Justin and Jordan signing off. saying be safe out there, everybody, and grow smarter. That's our show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. I know you did. Thank you for tuning into today's show. Justin will be on Growcast TV shortly. That's our membership show. Find our membership, The Order of Cultivation, at growcastpodcast.com/join the order. We just instituted so many cool changes. You can now join a chapter, a regional chapter, if you would like to give a broad generalization of where you are, you know, nothing too personal, but the Midwest chapter, or the West Coast chapter, things like that. There's even the underground chapter, if you want to be super secretive. Work your way up in rank, earn prizes, not to mention all of the bonus content, the Discord for garden support, for winning prizes and contests, for sharing your successes, meeting growmies, growcastpodcast.com/join the order. Positive growers only. We'll see you there in the best membership around. We've got lots of things on the table here. Oklahoma. Yeah, that's right. Oklahoma in January. We've probably released hard dates. Make sure you're on the green list to get those dates at the time of this recording. I'm not worked out yet. But if you're on the green list, growcastpodcast.com/list, you will not miss a single travel update. And that's free to get on that list. Make sure you stay tuned because we're coming to Oklahoma mid-January. We'll see you there. We've got lots of other things in the works, including the Growcast Cup. That's right, the very own Growcast Growers Cup. It's all coming. Stay tuned, everybody. Get on the list. Thank you so much for listening, though. I just appreciate you subscribers so much, downloading, tuning in. We'll see you next week with more Growcast. Bye-bye, everybody.